tweet at TodaySOR.
Now, happily, my microphone was not open when I did that little premature end to the Celtic Tenors. Anyway, they enjoyed it, and so did we. Now, with me in studio is JP McMahon, Galway-based chef, restaurateur and author. The Irish Cookbook is the simple name of your new publication, but inside, it seems to me, it's far from simple. From the origins of Irish food, its influences over thousands of years, to 500 recipes, stews, soups, butters, curds, breads and shrubs. More on that one later. JP, good morning to you.
Morning.
You've been an advocate for Irish food and Irish ingredients for many years. So is this book basically your contribution to kickstarting Irish cuisine for what it can be in the future?
Yeah, I suppose. Like it's another kickstart. I think, as many things in Ireland, it's getting, we always seem to be on the wheel and perpetually doing things. And I suppose at the very beginning, I was hesitant to do that when I was offered to do the book, because I thought, does the world need another Irish food cookbook?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we had Full and Plenty. Ryan Tuberty was talking about it 2 hours ago.
Morris,
1940 what?
I can't remember the 40s. I mean, there's Florence Irwin, there's Theodore Fitzgibbon, there's Monica Sheridan, and they're all thanked at the back of the book, because there are many, many women who I suppose don't get acknowledged. And then there's Doreen Allen. So there's so many, and you have like Ross Lewis and so many chefs. But then I thought, listen, I suppose there's stuff we've been doing in an ear for 10 years that's on the wild food and the seaweed. And I suppose if I could add to it and at the same time just revive it, maybe give it a 21st century examination, you know.
Yeah, and, I mean, and you mentioned seaweed.
Yeah, I wanted a lot more seaweed in the book, but it was a negotiation between myself and the editors, and I would have had seaweed everywhere, but of course they're commercially minded as I am, and so they pulled back on the seaweed. And but it's still an important aspect, and it's undervalued, but perhaps a book like this will give it more value and help it.
Now, as well as including lots of history about Irish food, you, for some of the classic or traditional or just old recipes, you went along to the National Library.
Yeah, and that's like the National Library is a great place, and like as the Joyce in me loves to sit there and pretend I'm James Joyce, and but I'm writing a cookbook. But I just love looking at very old recipes, not so much to copy them, but just to get inspiration to try and find how we would make that palatable now, because we forget how over the couple of hundred years like our palates change. And you're talking about pre-refrigeration, pre-freezer, and things would have been either very, very sweet or very, very acidic, or very, very salty, and to keep them going. So, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say to you, why had you a criterion for inclusion or exclusion in this? I mean, do all of the ingredients have to be Irish or Irish?
No. So and this is a really good question, because at the beginning, with my little ear hat on, I thought I'm only going to do the stuff that grows in Ireland, and I said, oh, sure, I'll take the potato because sure, that's been here long enough. But then you come into, well, will I take the tomato? Will I take the courgette? And then it's like, well, what about spices? And we don't use any spice in an ear, but spices have been in Ireland at least 1,000 years, like from the Normans. Mm. And then so are they not Irish? And so in the end, my criteria was anything that has been eaten in Ireland for the 10,000 years we've been here, within reason, I said that is Irish food.
But now, did you draw the line at chocolate?
No, I did. No. Chocolate, again, we don't use in an ear. But again, chocolate is something that is produced in Ireland. And so you could argue that chocolate is just as Irish or just as part of Irish food culture as the oyster is. And it does get very philosophical
Well, let's get more specific now than philosophical, JP. Cauliflower cheese, a classic, a very simple recipe. What's your secret to the best version?
My secret is blanching the cauliflower in boiling water and then putting it either into ice water or putting it directly in the tray beforehand. Because when you bake the cauliflower, I find it doesn't have enough moisture in it to become soft. So plunging it into boiling water and then putting it out and then putting your cheese sauce on and then baking it for a little less time, because the cauliflower is already soft, I think makes it a nice dish. And it was actually the first time I'd made that, I think, probably since Home Economics. And we were making the recipes and I was like, God, I never thought I'd be making cauliflower cheese. But
you have a recipe for spelt and leeks. Now, what's spelt and is it worth the effort?
Yeah, spelt is an older form of wheat. Both spelt and rye have a tradition in Ireland, and they were used a lot in the Bronze Age and up to the Middle Ages. Now they're considered a health food, but they grow well in Ireland, and Dunanny Farm up in I think it's County Louth grow spelt and rye. And I love using them as kind of the three grains. Rye, spelt and barley are the three Irish grains, I think.
I was surprised to read that there's this 19th century recipe because it has quite a modern feel to it. Carrots and ginger.
and with some up with, well, actually with paprika. And we forget, I suppose, being part of the British Empire, that we had so much colonial influence. And that was a recipe I came across in on a book on a book on Joyce, actually, in recipes that inspired Ulysses and recipes from 19th century Dublin. And some of them were really in saffron buns was another one. And I thought, like, saffron was like paella and so contemporary Spanish. And we had these things in Ireland, and even sherry. There's a bit of sherry used in the recipe. Mm. A lot of sherry in Ireland at the turn of the century. And I think independence changed our attitudes towards food. And also the Second World War, and we kind of became more inward looking. And then we just assumed we were always like that, which wasn't the case.
Now, here's a fascinating one, at least to me anyway. Potatoes cooked in seawater.
Yeah, seawater, I suppose, before you could turn on the tap, and if you live by the sea, you just went down and got your water. And it's a very kind of trendy thing to do now, is to cook things in seawater, cook mussels in seawater and potatoes in seawater. And potatoes cooked in seawater are now a kind of iconic dish of the Canary Islands, and you boil down the seawater and the salt sticks to the potato. But it was a common practice to cook potatoes, because the potatoes were everywhere, and we're an island, it was to cook your potatoes in seawater. And they actually produce a really, really beautiful effect.
They kind of get a little shriveled, do they?
They get shriveled, and the salt sticks to them. And if you reduce the water right down, I mean, you're like, don't put it in your best pot, like, and literally wait till the water completely disappears, and then the remaining salt will be stuck to the spot.
Now, this is kind of in the here category. On page 74, you probably know what I'm going to ask here. Did you really include a crisp sandwich in your Irish cookbook?
Absolutely. And I think that was the devil in me, and the committee, because I suppose it's more an indication of, I didn't put a breakfast roll in, and but at the same or what is it, a spice bag? But at the same time, like, a crisp sandwich is like a phenomenon. Now they sell them on Aer Lingus, like, and you make them yourself, and you, like, it's €5 and you get your bread and you get the whole theatre of making a crisp sandwich. But it is quite a unique thing, because it's soft and crunchy, and the butter, like, I mean, I'm sure there are Michelin
star crisp
sandwiches.
I've never had one, believe it or not. Actually, this is the devil in you, not the crisp sandwich. It's the sheep's head.
There was ones that were probably worse, but that was the most relatable. Because I couldn't get a puffin recipe into the book, and we used to eat puffins, and they're protected species in Ireland now. So I said a puffin tartare was a no-no.
Have you never done a seagull?
A seagull, or seagull's eggs is also, but the sheep's heads would have been very, very common. And we've used them in the restaurant before, because we're very used to eating pig's heads and taking the cheeks off the pigs. Now, of course, they have smaller cheeks, and they don't look the best, but they're a good one for the children, you know, to
frighten them,
teach them about things.
Yeah, and like, your good taste to be had. Yeah, I mean, would your butcher give you a sheep's? Oh, I suppose you would if he asked. Or sheep.
Yeah, and most sheep's head now actually head to China, as I was saying to you, because the Chinese love them.
Yeah, now, I mentioned shrubs in the intro, but these are not shrubs as in plants. Tell me about the shrub.
Shrub is an old Irish tonic that would have been like a mixture of vinegar and something sweet like honey, and possibly like rosehip would have been like for vitamin C. So they're like a tonic, like a pre-medicine thing, where if you had a cold or a flu coming on, you drink your rosehip shrub. Some of them were quite alcoholic, so some of them had a lot of brandy in them. But they were a way in which, like, to make people feel better before modern medicine.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about seafood and Stefan Griesbach's place. I don't know if you work with him, but there's lots of seafood, like, for instance, and this one might be controversial, live razor clams. Now, when you say live, you mean live?
You mean, they come live anyway, but we mostly
So do lobsters.
But we, like, if you cut them open live and then just take them out, and it'll be like a little wriggly worm, and you eat it. Like, it's the most freshest, delicate thing you can eat. And, like, I was actually inspired by...
You mean it's live when you're eating it?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like a little worm. Like, it's just moving around a little bit.
I'm not persuaded.
But it's very... you're going to dress a little bit with oil and salt and vinegar. I'm not going to
up
raw.
Now, there's a specific freshwater fish section. Salmon, brown trout, pollen, pike, carp, perch. These are all right in front of us, but we don't eat them.
Not at all. And a lot of, the Polish would fish them and eat them. And we've just turned completely away, and coming across pike recipes from all the way back to the 17th century. And we've kind of turned away from, other than, say, brown trout is probably the only fish that we fish for, and all the rest is just sport. And I don't know if that's our relationship with the rivers and the land and land ownership and like all of those things that are messed up with our in our own food consciousness. And I think that's one of the reasons when we look back at some of the recipes from
No, there's brilliant stuff in the various meat sections: poultry, wild game, boar and pork, and how to make your own sausages. Now, actually, my first ever job, Fred Hertridge's butcher shop.
Oh, very good.
Marcus Reading. I stuck it for a month, and so I know a few things about that.
Yeah, but
you reckon you'll do better at home?
It's very simple, and even if you don't have a sausage press, you can literally put it into a piping bag and make with the sausage skins, and you can buy synthetic sausage skins. It's not.
Oh, but you have to have the real things. I mean, you know, down to the abattoir. I went down for the buckets of it.
If a visit to the abattoir should be on the curriculum, you know, for everyone.
Yeah, they used to go down to Billy Haney for the bungs. So that's what they worked on then.
Ah, very good.
So look, that's just one little aside. It's called The Irish Cookbook by J.P. McMahon, published by Phaidon. An amazing cover on it.
Lovely cover. It's textured. And it's we have a signing and I'm in conversation in Hodges Figures tomorrow at 6:30.
That's in Dublin?
Yes.
Okay, well, look, I'm not going to mention the price. People wouldn't believe it.
JP, it's good.
Thank you so much.
For 3.5 years' work, okay. It's not too bad.
€45.